Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bill Rajo, the senior fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, is my colleague and co-host. He keeps the Long War Journal. And a major contributor to the Long War Journal joins us, David Daoud of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, our man on Hezbollah. But we're going to begin with that rogue outfit called the Houthis in northern Yemen. Not only intimidating Red Sea traffic, that's global damage, but also, I'm told from reporting, each morning firing ballistic missiles in some fashion, some of which are intercepted, some get through, into Israel. Why? The original claim was we support Hamas. Not much left to support, but the missiles continue. David, a very good evening to you. Thank you. The U.S. Navy, the Royal Navy, I believe, has participated, and the collective brain power of the militaries in the region have not solved the Houthis. Is there a solution, or is this low-level warfare to be a condition as long as the Houthis insist and get resupplied? Good evening to you, David.
Good evening, John. It's nice to be on again. It depends on what you mean by solution. I was asked this problem yesterday, and there are two solutions. They're solving it the wrong way. If we recall, the Houthis are attacking Israel for the same reasons that Hezbollah attacked Israel up until the November 27th ceasefire. They said, we will continue attacking until there's a Gaza ceasefire. So one solution is to achieve a Gaza ceasefire, perhaps at any price, and the Houthis will presumably, based on their words, stop attacking. That's one solution. It's a short-term solution. It leaves one of the, increasingly demonstrating that they're one of the more sophisticated terror organizations on Earth, ballistic missiles, drones that can reach thousands of miles away, on the shores of one of the most vital shipping lanes in the world. So it's a solution, if it's a good one. The other solution is to do to the Houthis what the Israelis did to Hezbollah, force them to back down. And that depends on collective will and capabilities. So the Israelis have demonstrated that they can conduct pinpoint strikes against the Houthis at that distance, but it'll take more. It'll take something more sustained, and it's unclear if the Israelis have the capabilities. The United States, the United Kingdom, with their navies, with their much bigger capabilities than the Israelis, could obviously put more pressure on the Houthis to stop. The question is a matter of will there, right? The lack or presence of will, and we will see how that will materialize with the incoming Trump administration, which is due in office in a few days. The Biden administration last week in office. Now it's unclear. I highly doubt that they're going to take some kind of massive action against the Houthis in the waning days of the Biden administration.
David, a detail about the Houthis. The war in Yemen was many years underway between Saudi Arabia and its surrogates and the Houthis. Did they evidence this ability to launch ballistic missiles and drones during their war with Saudi Arabia and its surrogates, or was this something new since the October 7th?
No, this has been the case for years. I mean, they were attacking Saudi Arabia with ballistic missiles, especially towards the latter years of that conflict. If we remember the attack on Aptiq, the oil fields there, although some said that was Iran, but the drone capability, the ballistic missile capability, has been there for years.
Bill, you have a question.
David, it's often said that the United States, that Israel, that the UK should you know, target the Houthis. But what about countries like Saudi Arabia and Egypt, which have suffered a significant economic cost? Why have they been sidelined? And has there been any action within the UN to slap back the Houthis?
No, to answer the latter part of your question, not that I've seen. In terms of Saudi Arabia and Egypt, politically, the question is complicated. Yes, they've probably suffered the most directly, especially Saudi Arabia. You could argue that Houthi presence on the Bab el-Mandeb Straits is an existential question for Saudi Arabia, given that that's Saudi Arabia's really only outlet to the sea. And, you know, that's where their oil shipping and everything goes through. Same thing for Egypt. Castract Egypt needs the Suez Canal to be functioning properly. At the same time, you have the war in Gaza going on, and the Houthis are attacking in support of Gaza. So it's a matter of balancing your vital necessity against not angering the Arab street and being perceived as taking military action in support of an Israeli campaign. You don't want to be perceived in the Arab street as part of the broader circle. Concentric circles of this Israeli campaign, and that you're helping Israel alleviate the pressure of the Houthis in order to continue its war in Gaza, which is perceived in the Arab world, as we both know, as a genocide.
David, let's move from the Houthis in North Yemen unsolved, except for in the fashion you say, give in, appease. Mm-hmm. We move to the news out of Lebanon that there is a president, Mr. Aoun, who's been very well known, associated with the Lebanon Armed Forces, elected with two-thirds of the agreement of the legislature, which means, I'm told, that Hezbollah participated in his election, something that is surprising. Perhaps because they're weakened, I invite your comment. But is Aoun the man to force the Lebanese, to encourage the Lebanese Armed Forces to follow through on 1701 and actually confiscate the weapons from Hezbollah? Is Aoun capable of that scale of leadership?
So it's a complicated question. Yes, he did gain Hezbollah's votes after, according to several reports, consultations with Hezbollah. So the election happened on Thursday. Wednesday night, he reportedly met with Hezbollah's parliamentary blockheads, discussed matters related to security, the military, reconstruction, euphemisms for also Hezbollah's arms. And the meetings were both described as, or that meeting was described as positive. And the next day you had the first round of elections in the parliament. So in Lebanon, the parliamentarians vote for the president. It's not a direct election. People vote for the parliamentarians who then vote. Hezbollah and its allies, Amal, cast blank ballots. Aoun met with them after the first voting session. At another meeting that was described as positive, and then they came back and supported him. And some people have said, well, they had no choice because in the second round, you don't need that two-thirds majority. Except today, we have another process whereby the prime minister, right, there's been a prime minister designate, let's call it that, as far as we can see. And he did not gain Hezbollah's approval, or at least it came, his nomination seems to have come as a shock to Hezbollah. So they didn't name him. So there's something that happened between them and Aoun that led to them naming him. But that, there's something beyond that, that the president doesn't have the authority in Lebanon to disarm Hezbollah. That constitutional authority was stripped from the president and given to the cabinet after the civil war. The cabinet, the prime minister, the cabinet, are the true executive power in Lebanon. They are the ones that head the armed forces. And if anyone were to give the order to the Lebanese armed forces to disarm Hezbollah, would have to come from the cabinet. And that depends on the prime minister that seems to have just been nominated. No F's to them.
And therefore, at this point, there's reason to believe it'll be followed through. I understand the politics.
It's too soon to say. So, you know, Lebanon woke up this morning with the expectation that Najib Mikati, the current caretaker prime minister until Nawaf Salam takes his post, was going to be elected. There were reports that several people or several blocks in parliament were going to vote for Mikati. He seemed to have 55 votes in the bag out of 128 votes of all the parliamentarians in Lebanon. Then today, as the consultations with the president happen, right, this is how a prime minister is appointed. Each block goes to the president and nominates a prime minister. A lot of those parties that had seemingly committed to backing Mikati, Hezbollah's preferred candidate, back Nawef Slem, who is not, he's not the firebrand, because there were others. There was Fuad Makhdoumi, who was the opposition's preferred candidate, and there was Ashraf Rifi, who would have probably given the order immediately upon taking office to disarm Hezbollah. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But then you have somewhere kind of closer to Mikati, Nawef Slem, who's this milquetoast, lukewarm character. Hezbollah doesn't have the best relationship with him. And now he seems to have been, a lot of the parties with whom they were allied seem to have flipped and given him their backing. Now, the fat lady has not sung yet, because now he has to put together a cabinet and it has to get the approval and put out a policy statement of what his government intends to do. And that has to gain the approval of parliament. So we're not there yet. Hezbollah today did not, even after a lot of their partners nominated Nawef Slem, came out and said, we're not nominating anyone. The Amal party, Hezbollah's ally, also came out and said, we're not nominating anyone. I think they intend to play hardball during the government formation process to ensure that their interests are guaranteed, that they perhaps have ministries in the new government. They were also taken, I think they were shocked, right? They went in today expecting Mikati to have it in the bag, and they got another person. So I think they're in the government formation process, they're going to play hardball to make sure their interests are guaranteed, kind of similar to what they did with Aoun.
Right?
Aoun gives them assurances Wednesday night. They still play hardball during the first electoral session to say, you need us for election. We still have power in this country. We still can hold the political process hostage. I think that's going to happen moving forward. I wouldn't count them out yet. Even if they're excluded from the government, Lebanon has a lot to digest right now. They have an electricity crisis, financial crisis. The institutions are in crisis, right? Lebanon is a basket of crises, one of which is Hezbollah's arms. So if you're trying to solve the problem of the economy, the problem of institutions, of infrastructure, so on and so forth, you can't simultaneously pick a fight with what remains, yes, a diminished actor like Hezbollah, but still a very powerful actor, and one that, as far as we can still has considerable popular backing among Lebanese Shiites. So you're going to have to choose which you want to do.
We're speaking with David Daoud of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. Bill Rajo is my colleague and co-host. And when we come back, Hamas.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.